onto your life.
There's nothing a retired governor can do, but a president.
Now he can do a thing or two.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
I will be frank with you that as a citizen, I would not like to see any political party outlawed on the basis of its ideology. Because I still believe, Mr. Chairman, that democracy can handle it.
I was a brand new KGB officer, given my first intelligence assignment. A certain actor and union leader.
Dutch, there's a purpose for your life.
You can run from a bully for so long, but after a while, you're gonna have to stand up to him.
It's my boy!
There's about to be another war right here in Hollywood. The commies on one side, the mob on the other, and you're right in the middle, son.
If you put as much work into your career as you do making your speeches, you'd have an Oscar by now.
Hello, I'm Nancy Davis.
Hello, Nancy Davis, I'm Ron Reagan.
I'm curious, Ron.
What would you say is the issue of our time?
No question about it. Communism and the Soviet Union.
Get in the game. Run for office.
It's you!
I'm running for governor, and I would like your vote.
I've forgotten your name.
Do his initials help, RR?
Honey, Roy Rogers is here! And he's running for governor!
Oh my goodness, Sandy Rios with you. This is one of my favorite days. I've always loved movies. I love history. I hate communism. I spent my life, much of it, some of it, in Berlin, Germany during the Cold War. I spent quite a bit of time in Moscow right before the Soviet Union fell. I stood in line all night to pay tribute to Ronald Reagan when he died, as he lay in state in the Capitol Rotunda. I have a personal connection with this movie, Reagan, but it's not just because of the personal connection. This story is a story that's so important for our time now. It's inspirational. It's also true. And we are now fighting many of the battles that he talks about and experiences in his life. So we're going to talk today with the screenwriter of the movie Reagan, the story, of course, of Ronald Reagan, based on the book by Paul Kinger, who many of you have heard through the years as I've done interviews. Paul's one of my favorite, professor at Grove City. The movie is based on his book. It's just a... I think, you know, pay the money and go to the movie. I know some of you want to wait till it's on Netflix. Don't do that. Help them, actually. This is helping you, trust me. It's such a great movie. But help them by paying for a ticket and going to see it and bring your friends, because this movie could have tremendous impact on our culture in so many ways. Well, we'll get to it in just a second. But first, as peaceful pro-life advocates face imprisonment and millions of dollars in fines, the left continues their attacks, not only extinguishing the lives of the unborn in exponential numbers, but also trying to take away our right to defend them. The fate of an aborted baby is even grimmer. They never get a chance at life. But in this darkness, there is a way to defend life, and that's through the incredible work of Preborn's network of clinics. When you support Preborn, you offer life and love to mothers in crisis and at-risk babies. Introducing these mothers to their child through ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. Each life-saving ultrasound costs just $28. But hear me, Preborn can't do this without us, you and me. Please give your best gift today and sponsor as many ultrasounds as you can. You know, all of your donations are tax deductible. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. And if you don't know that, happy to tell you. You can call us at 662-821-2040. 662-821-2040. You can find us on social media platforms from Telegram to Twitter. Twitter is the one I use the most to post information on, but all of them are available, and I hope that you will do that and follow us. Also, you can hear the podcast at any podcast platform that you like. A lot of people are podcasting now. Some of you are new to it, but it's actually cool, isn't it? I didn't like it at first because I love live radio. I will always love live radio. But the beauty of this is that you can listen when you have time. You can go halfway through and stop it. You can pick it up and listen to it again. It's a wonderful way to listen, to actually learn about what's happening in the world right now. We're trying to help all of us navigate through these dangerous times. All right, so those are the ways you can listen. You can also go to sandyrios.com if you want more information. Well, for today's show, I think you're in for a treat. I do. We are talking to the screenwriter, and he is absolutely delightful on the movie Reagan on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
There's nothing a retired governor can do about the Soviets, but a president.
Now he can do a thing or two.
Welcome to your life.
I was a lifeguard on a river.
There's no turning back.
And I learned how to read the currents. Not just the ones on the surface, but also the ones deep underneath the water.
I am about to start the biggest war of this century, and I'm not going to fire a single shot.
You're going to blow up 8 years of diplomacy.
Well, if you think that got their undies in a wad, you just wait.
What did the president know, and when did he know it?
What would you have me do?
I want you to fight!
Mr. Gorbachev! Tear down this wall.
Wants to rule the world.
All right, Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, it was my privilege to attend. The Reagan movie is not new, but I saw it for the first time just last week. And I was so blown away. I, you know, have been in entertainment for a long time, so it matters to me that things are quality. Not only the subject matter, but also just the production, the writing, everything. The acting is just a jaw-dropping movie. It's so jaw-dropping that audiences, now Rotten Tomatoes, the reviewers, not so much. They don't like the story of Reagan so much. They're giving it like 17%. The audience, well, 98% on Rotten Tomatoes and 98% on Fandango. 100 people just love it, and I'm one of those people. And so it is my privilege today to talk to a person who had a lot to do. I always complain that movies in Hollywood, out of Hollywood, have great visuals, incredible technology, beautiful people, but the screenwriting, story, the screen, the conversations are so substandard. That's why I watch foreign films all the time. Well, there's a reason why this one is good, because there was a great screenwriter. And his name is Howie Klausner, and he joins us this morning. Howie, thank you for joining us.
Are you kidding? I get to talk to the great one. I'm so excited. Thank you so very much for having me, Sandy.
Oh, you're in show business, Howie. I know. But let me give you a better introduction, because Howie is a writer and producer of film, television, and music. He began his work with Clint Eastwood's blockbuster Space Cowboys, and then he spent 5 years at Warner Brothers. He has been involved with tons of movies. We get Handshake with Kevin Sorbo, The Identical with Ray Liotta and Ashley Judd, The Last Ride with Henry Thomas and Kaley Cuoco, I guess that's pronunciation. But he also is the founder and president of I-40 Studios in Nashville, where he is getting ready to launch his first their first movie in the spring of 2025, which we will get to, Howie, I promise. But I wanted people to understand... has Hollywood emptied out and all of you creatives are now in Nashville?
There's a lot of us. There's a lot of us here now for all sorts of reasons.
Well, yes. Well, I mean, that's really true. I thought it was the high, I thought it was because of the illegal immigrants that are being moved to Nashville that it was getting so big, but it's really the people from Hollywood escaping the movie scene, right?
Well, a lot of people around here feel like Californians are illegal immigrants, but that's a whole nother conversation.
I get that because I live in Florida now, so we have our own way of talking about this. But we always say, don't New York my Florida. But anyway, all right, Howie, is this the biggest project? Because right now, this is the top 10 in the films. It's surpassed Oliver Stone's W at the domestic box office. It's been, mm-hmm. It is currently wildly successful. Is this your most successful film so far?
Well, I think my first big movie was Space Cowboys with Clint Eastwood. So at the box office, certainly that was the biggest one for me. I've had a few little medium-sized success stories, I guess. But in about 20 years, this is the biggest by far. But I think less of the – I would have to say yes, less on the box office numbers, which are fine. We're doing fine, by the way. But really – just the emotional impact that this movie is having. I mean, so I'm going to say, yes, by far, this is the most successful film I've been a part of.
Let me just ask, when you're talking to people about your work, and they haven't seen, you know, certainly not enough people have seen Reagan, although millions are seeing it, how would you describe this movie to others? You're the writer, yeah. How would you describe it?
I describe this film as sort of, you know, somewhere between a remembrance of what we were and a challenge to what we can be again. As I've said a few times to audiences, it's like, because there's always an alienation about, you know, you're going to alienate at least 50% of the population a little bit if it's about any political figure, because that's the world we live in now. But I've said over and over, it's like, I didn't write a Republican movie. I wrote an American movie. And I think that is the main point for me that I want to convey, that we all want to convey, that this is a movie for all of us, just to challenge us again to be what we were and really can be again. And so I think that was the genesis of the project, and this just happens to be a really, really great man, and it's a life story. That's how I describe the movie.
Yeah, well, it is, that's for sure, and you told it so well. Gosh. It was just amazing. Sometimes, you know, his life, there's a huge scope to his life. It goes through so many decades of, you know, his acting, his presidency of the Screen mm-hmm. Actors Guild, his time in Illinois. Illinois is my home state, by the way. So you know, his home is near where I grew up. Not where I lived in Chicago and Dixon. But the scope is huge. The world, the communism, you know, and yeah. You somehow managed. Because I'm thinking that you were responsible for a lot of this, Howie, distilling it into a storyline that made sense and wasn't overwhelming for people. Because a lot of books, you know, this is based on a book by a good friend of mine, Paul Kinger, The Crusader, Ronald Reagan, and the Fall of Communism. And I know how Paul writes. He's a professor at Grove City. He understands so many details and nuances about communism. That's what he teaches. So how in the world did you distill that into a script that people would understand and a storyline that they would follow?
Well, first of all, a big high five to Paul as well, because it really down deep, he was the genesis of the project with the producers. And so what really, yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. Ronald Reagan lived the 20th century, you know, 1911, and he passed away in 2004. That was the scope of his life. And I would argue, you know, who knows how the 21st century is going to actually play out when it, you know, as it goes. But this was the most dramatic and I think good versus evil century, you know, really since the Roman times and Jesus. I mean, you know, when you come right down to it, communism is that big of a threat to everything we hold dear. And so, that is the thread of the movie. Every screenwriter, you know, especially when you've got a life story, like, my gosh, how do I choose? The spine of this story really is, you know, as a child, Reagan was told by his mother, who was a deeply, deeply devout Christian, it's like, there is a plan for your life. And so, you know, if you go through all those things you just ticked off, I mean, Reagan did well at all of them, but there was always something about it that he knew. This isn't truly the full purpose of my life. I'm being prepared for something. And just one more little plot bit. As a child, he was actually introduced to how horrible communism really was in his church. So he never lost it. So that became the focus of his life in the 1950s. And so that was really it. You know, there was a whole lot that I couldn't put on screen just because it would be a 25-hour movie, you know.
Exactly. Like War and Peace.
Or
War and Peace, Tolstoy.
You know, so,
people have tried to do War and Peace, and it is like a 10-12-hour movie. So,
Wear you out.
Yeah.
Wear you out.
Howie, did you feel that, did you, okay, so did you feel you had a good grasp on communism and before you started this project?
Yeah, I did. I did. I'm old enough to. I lived his presidency. So I watched, you know, riveted everything with him and Mikhail Gorbachev. So, and I, you know, in college, I was not a history minor, but I took a lot of history classes, and the two favorite classes I took were Russian history and communism. So I was well versed in it. I was a history teacher. So, and in preparation for this thing, of course, reading all of Paul's works, and man, oh man, did I read a lot of books and watch a lot of YouTube video. But, you know, I wouldn't call myself a scholar on it, but I had a pretty good grasp on it.
Well, I shouldn't be surprised at that, because you wrote like someone who had that. And the story, of course, we can't tell the whole story. I wish we could. I would say, just to you, Howie, this, I think I shared with this with you in an email. This was so personal to me. Not that that matters. It doesn't matter, because I'm not part of this story. But I would just say that, you know, I lived in Berlin, Germany during the Cold War, before the wall. And so I saw, when you showed footage of people trying to escape and all of that, I was there for part of that. And when he spoke at the Berlin Wall and said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall," I wasn't there, but it was so meaningful to me because I had watched all of that. And so I actually stood in line all night long in Washington, D.C., and saw the sun come up over the Capitol to pay respects in the rotunda to his body. You know, he was laid on President Lincoln's, the catafalque, call that. That he was late on that. It was gorgeous. But anyway, those are just personal things, why the movie impacted me so much. All right, I want to talk to you about Dennis Quaid. I swear, I never in my life saw it coming. When I saw that, I saw a trailer of this a few months ago at an insider meeting. I didn't have a chance to see the movie, and I thought, how in the world can Dennis Quaid play Ronald Reagan? He's a great actor, but really, how would that work? I'm telling you, Howie, I'm blown away. And so I'm asking you, because you did another movie with Dennis, were you part of that selection?
I was. We were kind of on the making of the film. You know, a lot of films I'm on, I'm just simply the writer, and the writer means you might just well be the architect for the building. You hand it in and you move on and say good luck, guys. You know, fortunately for me, we are a band of brothers, really, the four of us: producers Mark Joseph and John Sullivan, director Sean McNamara, and myself. It's like coming out of a war. I've been on this project for 14 years. So
kidding?
You know, it's my life. It really is my life. So. The answer is yes. And the comment on Dennis, Dennis was not the first choice. You know, in those 14 years, there were a couple of very high profile guys who were loosely attached to play it. And all kinds of things happened that it didn't really work out. And when Dennis showed up, it was that sort of, he's the guy. I mean, he's the guy. The funny thing that he told me in the process, he said, "My challenge is to not be a Ronald Reagan impersonator for 2 hours." Because Dennis, this is the thing about it, he's a great actor. He's a world-class actor.
Well, we can see that now. can see that now.
And I think in a more normal universe of just not really that long ago, there's no doubt he would be nominated for Best Actor and probably win. But here's the funny thing about Dennis is when he was a kid, he wanted to be Rich Little. Do you remember Rich Little, the greatest impersonator that ever lived?
Yes,
and Dennis can impersonate anybody. So really, his challenge as an actor is, no, I can't do a Ronald Reagan impersonation. I've got to ingest this character and become this character, and he did. And it was breathtaking to watch him work.
Well, Well, just to put it in my own terms, I forgot it was Dennis Quaid. He really did succeed. I did not even think about that. I mean, after the first
scene,
that was it.
That's the highest compliment you could pay an actor. That's the highest compliment you could pay him. And he'll probably listen to this, but if not, I'm going to text him and say, you know what Candy Rios just said?
Okay, great. No, but I'm just sincere. And the other person that, well, there's so many. But Robert Davi, you know, is a great actor also. I had the chance of interviewing him years ago when I was on radio in Chicago, and he's so personable. He's a great guy.
True.
But he has a lot of, I don't want to insult him, but maybe some B-movies, nothing. No, I don't think he's running Academy. I don't know. Maybe he has. Oh, my goodness. He played Leonid Brezhnev. Leonid Brezhnev.
he was phenomenal. Great.
He was a great guy.
He had the time of his life playing that role.
Even without his hat, the hat he always wears, that little square hat. Anyway, but the point I want to make really is that these guys probably have not been given a chance to do these great roles, and they rose to the occasion, and man, they knocked it out. John Voight. Okay, so tell me about how he became Russian. I mean, give us some insight there about how that he was chosen to play Viktor Petrovich.
You know, I got to tell you, just when you work with actors, there's a level of actor. All these professional actors in the movies, they're wonderful. I mean, they're wonderful. They're so talented. I wanted to be an actor when I was a kid, and you know, at some point realized, you know what, I don't have that. But when you step in the presence of a true Academy Award winner like that, you can just see there's just something about a person like that. And John, who's the most genuine, sweet, loving person you could ever meet. He just, to watch this guy work and to watch, you know, he's very passionate about it. You know, John was basically a Marxist in the 1960s when that was the hip, cool thing to do as a young guy coming out of college. And over time, you know, his passion for America and freedom and democracy in the truest sense of the term that we all love, that has been his driving force. He's, you know, he's suffered in Hollywood because of it, as many folks like him have. But you know what? When he stepped into the role of the Russian guy, it was the same thing. I forgot it was John Voight. there's a 100-year-old Russian spy talking to me right now.
I know. And the accent, it was perfect. The other thing I didn't say, it's not important, but I was in Moscow doing interviews right before the fall of the Soviet Union. I was there for 2 weeks.
Really?
And I interviewed.
Really?
Yes. Yes, and so I was there during a lot of what you're talking about, like this, the right before, when there's openness, glasnost, and everyone's, there's a lot of confusion in Russia, and you capture that period, and the Russian accent that John did was just excellent. I just have nothing but praise, really. I want to ask you, what was your favorite part? Maybe, let's just ask you this way. What was your favorite dialogue exchange that you spent a lot of time on and you're really happy with the way it turned out?
Well, I think for me, just as a writer, as the experience of writing, there's a scene when Reagan has first become a big movie star, and he's sitting at a table at the Coconut Grove, and he's sitting with some of the leading, how shall we say, leftist screenwriters there. And this is a true story. This actually did happen. And where he's really coming face to face with the fact that, you know what, communism actually is alive and well in Hollywood, and there's some people working toward that. So to write a scene with that level of tension, I think you'll only really understand the tension if you really understand the context. But I loved writing that scene, and I thought it was so well done. Sean directed a great scene there, so I think that was probably my favorite. On the action part, you saw the ending. I probably shouldn't give the spoiler alert, but I mean, our hero rides away into the sunset, and that was the most breathtaking moment of my entire 30-something year career watching that get filmed. It was amazing.
Well, I won't describe it for the reasons you just said, but. Yes.
Go see the movie so you can see it for yourself, everybody.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that is the point of this. I mean, obviously, I want people to know about it, but this is history. I mean, honestly, what you wrote, because Reagan did so much radio and we have so much of his actual words, his speeches, his time as a screen. So you didn't really, from my perspective, there didn't have to be a lot of fabrication. I'm not talking about dialogue. I know, like with the Russians, you had to make off. But there was really, and Paul knows so much about behind the scenes in Russia after the, you know, during the Cold War and afterwards, I'm thinking that you didn't have to really, like, you know how people have to do fake characters and you know what I'm saying? I didn't think of the proper words for it. But it seemed like...
Fictional. You got to make it up.
Right, exactly. It seemed like it, most everything in there was actually actually happened were his words. And I couldn't identify any time it wasn't. Maybe not the actual words, but respond to that.
I appreciate that. You know, when I met Paul, I told him, I said, you know what, man, this one's mine to screw up. So, you know, I was always, always mindful of that. You know, you're not writing a documentary. They're different things. And so, you know, a lot of times historical biopics will forget that. And every little historical detail has to be there, has to be right. And I'm a historian, so I believe that 100%. But in the end, Reagan's life and this story was a dramatic three-act story. And so my job is to capture that, capture the constant tension as it rises, which is movie 101, you know, until its final confrontation. So, you know, I appreciate that, and you cannot imagine the layers of scrutiny that I went through to make sure I wasn't, A, making something up, or, you know, B, or just plain getting it wrong. I mean, I met with everybody, and the producers are deep Reagan scholars, and I've got the great one, Paul Kilgore, nearby too. So I had to get this one right.
Yeah, well, I get it, because Paul's a detail guy and he doesn't leave things out. I mean, and he's been doing this for decades, you know, teaching this. So yeah, so yeah, you were up against a big hill to climb.
Now,
just a different thing, because all the years that I've followed Reagan and his story and was there when he was president alive, I guess, in the United States. How's that for an interesting way to put it? Anyway, he was a president when I was still living, and I still am living. But I'm sorry. All right, so the way you wrote about Jane Wyman, that was his first wife. You were very careful about it, but I had never heard. I never knew. Michael Reagan, I've known Michael for a long time. I haven't talked to him in ages. I've never really known what happened with them. How did you come to that conclusion, and what was the source for that, or can you say?
Oh, no, the sources were there, not only in the biographies, but even in some of my interviews, that, you know, she was a complex woman. All people are complex. And she loved her husband. She did love her husband, but Reagan's attentions, you know, and that's what we talked about, among my favorite scenes that I wrote, when he was really brought face to face with this communism thing. It's like, wow, it's really happening here. This is history, folks. This is not right wing stuff. This is the truth. That Reagan's attention started moving toward that, but she married an actor. And that's why, you know, she challenges him. And when I think, are you a politician or are you an actor? And Dennis/Reagan answers her, and it's like he doesn't even answer the question. He just said, these are big, important things. So she began to sort of, the marriage began to flag as, you know, as he got more and more into the politics, you know, the union stuff going on in Hollywood. You know, meanwhile, her career is starting to rocket. So, you know, go ahead and look at like some Hollywood power couple right now and just go ahead and, you know, put whoever you want in that picture. So you can see what's happening. Her career is beginning to rocket. His is beginning to drop as you know, as a union president and all that stuff. You're not really an actor anymore. And so the marriage began to suffer very badly. And then when they lost their child, Christina, who only lived for a day, that was it. That was it. She left. And curiously, though, she endorsed him for president, and she voted for him, you know, 40 years later. So
well, and of course
we forgive in this life, and we move on, you know.
Well, of course, because God has to work in all of us. But the other thing I wanted to ask you, Howie, is in all of my years of following him and knowing his story, I know it better now. I never remember him being as outspoken about his faith in Christ as he was in this movie. And I know you didn't make that up. So not all books will record that. You know that. Some books don't want to talk about that part. What was were you surprised yourself in his outward expressions of his faith? Because that was not real common back then. You know, politicians for many years did not discuss, they would maybe mention God in a speech. But they didn't talk about personal faith. And so were you surprised at how open he was about it?
I was like you. I mean, you know, as a historian, as a history teacher, and a history student, you know, everything was just within the secular realm of the, you know, just the physical realm in which we live and what this figure did. But when you know, and again, we just keep shouting out to Paul Kilgore, which we should. He wrote another beautiful book called God and Ronald Reagan, and he details very, very, very fully. Just really the depth and the places where he did speak this. And you read his writings, and his entire life, he was never shy about saying, you know, whether something was the DP or not. And what he meant was the divine plan. So I wasn't shocked. I always, you know, you look at things like his famous evil empire speech. The famous evil empire speech was delivered to the National Association of Evangelicals. And he was quoting C.S. Lewis in there. So, you know, just as an aside, Sandy, I would say that, you know, he was characterized when I was in college as kind of, I believe he was referred to as an amiable dunce. And he's not really that bright. But he was an actor. He can play the role. He's surrounded by all these great people. He was not a dunce. He was a brilliantly read, and I have to say, he was a better writer than I am. I've read so many of his writings; it just it's breathtaking. This guy, his intellect was so high, and that his faith was that. But he played it out in his life, and so he was a Christian. There's no two ways about it.
Well, there isn't. You know, it's funny, Howie, how the people of God who are really serious are often humble and self-deprecating. And so the world doesn't mm-hmm. take them seriously. And they find out later about right. how great they really were or how smart they really were. It's happening now, I think. But I want to tell you a story you wouldn't know. Okay, you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
I have a good friend. His name is Dr. Jerry Root. He used to be a professor at Wheaton. He's a C.S. Lewis scholar. Do you know Jerry? Do you know Jerry? You know Jerry? Do you know his story about Reagan?
No, but I know okay. who he is. This is exciting to hear his name again.
Okay, well, he's a very different. Okay, so he's a kid in Whittier in California, and that's mm-hmm. President Reagan was speaking somewhere in Whittier, and as a college student, somehow he made his way into the exact room where Reagan came in. Reagan and an aide came in, and there's Jerry and President Reagan, and he's just a college student. And so he was a new believer, and he said to President Reagan, something about, I don't know the exact word, but something like this. Do you know the four spiritual laws? Do you know that God loves you? And so President Reagan interrupted him and said, yes, I know that, but I have to go somewhere, but here, tell him. And it was his aide. So he left the aide in the room, left
he
the room.
He went
wanted,
to his aide.
Yeah, Jerry, tell him. Jerry tells it better than I do, but that isn't that a great story?
Yeah. That's a great story. Jerry's a big guy. He certainly was when I knew
him. Well, I was a football player.
Like, whatever you say, Dr.
Yeah.
Root.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's. One other thing I want, well, maybe we won't talk too much longer here. I am sure you have a schedule, but I am curious about all the locations. I mean, you guys were everywhere. Were you actually in Berlin? Or was all that staged?
No, that was visual effects. That was computer visual effects. We shot most of the movie. You know, we're kind of the little engine that could. I mean, you know, I firmly believe this I'm going to lay on the director, Sean McNamara. His and the visual designers, he didn't do everything himself, certainly not. But as the director of this movie, you know, this movie cost a little north of $25 million to make. And as far as I'm concerned, Sean put about $60 million on screen. And that's tough to do. That's tough to do. It's not, you can't just fake everything with computers. So watching him recreate at least the bone Berlin Wall, and you know, watching all the fabulous visual effects happen. We shot about 60% of the movie in Guthrie, Oklahoma.
There were
lots of business reasons for that, and wow. and the COVID thing made it where it was the only place we could shoot in 2020. We were the only major motion picture filming in the fall of 2020. So, and Guthrie was wonderful. And by the way, it looks a lot like your neighboring hometown there, Dixon, Illinois. It looks a lot like it. So we were able to shoot there. And then we took a break for Christmas. And then we went out and we shot the rest of the movie at the Reagan Ranch there up in the Santa Ynez Mountains, north of Santa Barbara, and finished up at the his Air Force One out at the Reagan Library in Sea Valley.
Well, the Reagan Ranch, I had the privilege of being there. I had a little, I was doing a media thing, and I had a private tour of the ranch. You want to say about the word about the ranch, not the property, the, how gorgeous, but yep. the home. You want to say describe that to people, please?
You know, I can describe it better by the true story of Mikhail Gorbachev being driven to the Reagan Ranch after Reagan had left the White House. And he hosted, I'm pretty sure he hosted Margaret Thatcher there as well, but he hosted Mikhail Gorbachev after the fall, and he came out there. And, of course, Gorbachev, first of all, was very rattled by, if you've ever been to the Reagan Ranch, as Dennis Quaid calls it, and he's right, to get to it, you have to 5 miles of the worst road in the United States of America, straight uphill. You know, and so Gorbachev's already in a foul mood anyway. And he gets there, and he goes, yeah, okay, well, where's the house? Reagan says, this is the house. 1,500 square foot little ranch thing. It's just, I mean, it looks like something, you know, you'd see in some suburb in the middle of Nebraska, you know, 40 years ago, by the way. So, you know, it's just this modest little perfect thing, and it was just heaven. It was, you know, Gorbachev thought, you know, of course, you know, the former president of the States, this guy's going to live in some palace, you know, and, you know, over, you know, somewhere in La Jolla or something like that. It's like, nope, that was the Reagan Ranch right there.
When I saw it, in their bedroom, everything is everything was the way it was when they lived there. And there's like a bench on his side of the bed, right by the bed, because his feet were too long for the bed. So his feet would, there was a place to prop his feet up. And the other thing they told me is, you know, that there's a trailer or a long building, I think it's like a mobile something, that they told me at the time that that's where Margaret Thatcher stayed, in that little mobile. Yep. When she came, so
it's a true story. You know, the fun, even fun. I could just pile on with all these details, which I'm sure you saw too. They didn't even have a double queen or king size bed. What they did was they had two twin beds that he literally was, and they're still on there, plastic zip tied together, man and wife, so they could have a double bed.
True. You know, I don't remember that. I was just, it's stunning. And then there's pictures of all these world leaders in these two chairs by the fire. And so, and then when you know how tiny and rustic it was, it's really funny. You actually filmed in the kitchen, didn't you? Weren't some of the scenes from their kitchen?
We did. We're the only ones that have ever been allowed, and probably the last ones, even though they were wonderful and we were friends. But, you know, they really, unless I'm mistaken, that museum is not, it is, I believe it's the Young Americans who run it and control it. It's not an open museum to go there by appointment. It's tough to get because they just want to leave it exactly as it was. But they did. They allowed us to shoot in the kitchen, all over the grounds, obviously, and up in the barn, and even in the room there. When you see Dennis, you know, as the older Reagan picking up that book from his childhood, that was right off his shelf. That was not a prop. There it was.
Well, that's why the movie is so powerful, Howie, because of the authentic. It's just a true story. It's the truth, and it's about a man who was just extraordinary, and I think we, after watching the movie, people will understand how truly extraordinary he was, and you guys did an incredible job, a masterful job of capturing his life.
Thank you so much.
Howie Klausner is the writer of Reagan. And before you go, Howie, let's just briefly give a shout-out to your I-40 Studios, because as I understand it, you're working on a movie, a script, will you tell us, on the life of Peter, right?
Yes, I'm working with a wonderful studio in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, of all places. Louisiana has a thriving independent film scene. And a couple of the guys within that, they purchased a script that I wrote about the Apostle Peter, and it's more like Mel Gibson would tell that story. And Alejandro Monteverdi, the director of Sound of Freedom, wonderful, ridiculously talented man, he is going to direct it, and we're going to be shooting, I believe, it's somewhere between Morocco and Malta. That's still a discussion. But, it's my first script that is moving into, that I actually developed and started from the beginning, and it's moving into production as I-40 Studios. And my quick sentence on I-40 Studios is, I've been a content creator for about 30 years, and I've been a contract writer, I've sold a few things, but I've held the things that mean the most to me sort of for myself, and they're just, they're Reagan-like stories. They're, you know, this just sort of, you know, if you watch the Reagan film, you kind of remember the heroic epic that American movies used to be. So I've got a handful of those, and I'm going to begin work on all of those at the beginning of the year. And so that's, I'm finally hanging out my shingle as a producer and a business owner instead of just a writer for hire.
Just a writer. Well, you're just a writer. I think God's called you to this, Howie. I do. Let me just say, Howie Klausner, it's been a pleasure and a privilege. And I want to say to all of you listening, the Reagan movie is on now. I can't say enough about it. I've already said plenty, and I mean what I say. So you have to go see it before it leaves the theater. And Howie, we look forward to these other great movies that you will produce, because heaven knows the world needs these. So thank you for all that you're doing, and thanks so much. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
When you support Preborn, you offer life and love to mothers in crisis and at-risk babies. Introducing these mothers to their children through ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. And each life-saving ultrasound costs just $28. If you would like to help, and I know so many of you would, you've done it, you're still doing it, go to preborn.com/Sandy. Also, if you have, if you really are doing well, some people are doing well financially now in spite of the economy. If you're one of those people and you have the money to do a leadership gift, your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours. And that will rescue probably about 200 babies. So let's give it our best. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from The Morning Show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Ronnie, remember when we met, you told me that you wanted to make a difference in this world. You know what you have to do.
Governor Reagan again, typically, is against such a proposal.
There you go again.
But he was not afraid to take us on.
There's nothing a retired governor can do about the Soviets, but a president,
now he can do a thing or two.
Welcome to your life.
I was a lifeguard on a river.
There's no turning back.
And I learned how to read the currents. Not just the ones on the surface, but also the ones deep underneath the water.
I am about to start the biggest war of this century, and I'm not going to fire a single shot.
You're going to blow up 8 years of diplomacy.
Well, if you think that got their undies in a while, you just wait.
What did the president know, and when did he know it?
What would you have me do?
I want you to fight!
Mr. Gorbachev! Tear down this wall.
Wants to rule the world.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's the trailer for the Reagan movie. And you get a glimpse, at least can hear a little bit of how powerful it was. I would just say, you know, it's my experience that when God calls people, they're often hesitant. They're hesitant. They're usually not cheerleaders for themselves. They're not usually saying, I've got a five-year plan and I want to be president or a chairman of the board or, you know, head whatever in the office by this time. Generally, people who are called of God are just kind of reluctant. And Ronald Reagan was reluctant. His mother told him that she felt there was a call on his life. And he never forgot that. So he loved to be an actor. He was an actor. And he was a good actor. In spite of what they say, he was a B actor. He might have been like Dennis Quaid. He might have been great if he'd stayed in longer, but he got... his heart and his mind took him to fighting communism in Hollywood. And that changed the trajectory of his life. He had a lot of discouragements. And he ended up in a place I think he never saw himself going. He wanted to be an actor. But God used him all the way. It's just... you will see that Ronald Reagan, along with Pope John, was responsible for bringing down communism in the world, at least for that time. Many people in D.C. in the national security sphere felt that that was the end. Communism was dead. It had just been destroyed because the Soviet Union pretty much dismantled communism. And we lived in a very strange but free place in all of those countries that were occupied by the Soviet Union for so many years, for so many horrible years during the Cold War. It was an amazing period of time. But now we see that actually communism, its doctrines, its policies, its deadly use of people for its own means, its hatred of God, is raising its ugly head in our country now. And the people that, the same forces that tried to destroy Ronald Reagan, and they did try to destroy him, they hated him. I know, I was there. Those same forces are maybe trying to bring down really good people now. Many of them are on my show. I have a lot of champions that that God has allowed me to meet, who have laid it on the line, and yet the powers that be, the dark forces at work among us, want them to be destroyed. And so it was with Ronald Reagan. This is a great movie, and I really do encourage you in the strongest possible way to go to the movie and watch this film and share it with other people, take other people. It will change a lot of people's lives because they are not as knowledgeable as some of us about the trajectory of communism in the world and in our country. So I hope that you'll do that. Well, I want to thank our sponsors. Timothy Plan is our newest sponsor. You can put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.